Okay, places, everyone, places.
You're cranked. I mean, cranked up on the board.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Well, bring me down. All right, that's better.
I think that's good.
All right.
Guess what, everybody? This is Ghostly Talk. It is Sunday night at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Ghostly Talk, of course, airs live from the Haunted Basement Studios in Fraser, Michigan, through two listeners throughout the world. And a lot of them, well, not a lot of them, but the really, really, really cool ones are in the chat room at pioneer.rollo.net. You go there, you click on text chat, you get in, or you use any IRC client, join the undernet network, and join the room Pound Pioneer Radio. And that lets you in the chat room, and there's all kinds of cool people. Did you know Prairie Ghost is in there?
Oh, really?
So is Magic Mind, of course, and Phobos, and Will, and myself, and I saw, who else did I see there? Let me look. Oh, of course, The person we met just, what, two Saturdays ago?
Oh, sweet, sexy Scott Kern.
Yeah, Scott Kern's in the room.
Hi, Scott.
And, of course,
Fishmeow. I still haven't mailed your atlas yet, sorry.
Yeah, Fishmeow.
I'm working on it. I really am. Wow. I put it in an envelope. I'm halfway
there. Oh, there you go.
I'm like, okay, I'll put this in an envelope.
Fishmeow's in the room. Havoc's in the room. Kemet's in the room. P13, a Pyle fan, and 235, as well as Lakota helping out, working the
chat
room. I
really like to know these people's real names are.
I have no idea. I know. I think we should call me X.
Call you X?
Yeah. Oh, no, there's already an X. Y. I'll have to be Y.
You're Y.
Yeah, because there's already an X in the room, so.
Powerful start to the show today. I'm Scott Al.
I'm Doug. And Will, of course, Karma, manning the board. Karma just came in the...
She came in with food.
Yeah, we sent her out for food, and she...
We kind of sent her off her course on the way here for food.
Yes, so she will be here, though. We've got an exciting show for you.
Very exciting show.
Who knows, everybody in the room who knows my... And everybody in the chat room who knows my one of my favorite topics, the one I keep bringing up over and over and over again, raise your hand or type... I know. in the chat room. Yes. We are going to be talking with somebody about Edgar Cayce.
Dr. Gregory Little.
Dr. Gregory Little is going to be on with us today, and we're going to be talking about Edgar Cayce and specifically the ARE, the Association for Research and Enlightenment, which is Edgar Cayce's the foundation that sort of was, you know, grew up around his readings and predictions. The ARE's Search for Atlantis. Which is interesting because I personally was never really into Atlantis, per se. Like, Atlantis wasn't my thing, right? Edgar Cayce, though, was. Edgar Cayce happens to mention Atlantis quite a bit in his life readings. He did several different kinds of readings. One of them was life readings. Of course, he's famous for his health readings, where he would help cure people of their ailments. But his life readings, he would go back into people's past lives, and one of the things that kept recurring was you were so and so in Atlantis. You operated the main power crystal or whatever, and of course people found this a little bit out there, as did Cayce, because Cayce himself was a devout Catholic or Christian. I don't remember which, but they're related. You know, believed in God and read the Bible, and he read the Bible he was one of them. 1 year or read the Bible once for every year of your life. Right?
Yeah.
And all this stuff about Atlantis was just ridiculous to him.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was in his trance, that's what it was. He was talking about Atlantis. And so they're trying to find Atlantis. They've been trying to find Atlantis for a while. And I read some of Dr. Little's book, fascinating stuff. This is a new book.
You're brand new.
Brand new. And it's they are continuing to search for Atlantis, and it's exactly what you think. The lost continent, the one sunken under the ocean, that kind of thing. So
it's one of those things that I'm like fascinated with, but I just haven't had the time to sit down and really research it. That's why I'm glad you're so into it this week, because I think the rest of the crew here is pretty crusty, so hopefully you can hold us up today.
Well, I am excited about talking to Dr. Little and finding out what's going on with the ARE search for Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have to accidentally sneak in some questions about Edgar Cayce himself. So, you know, because he's like a member of the ARE, and he and he, you know, does stuff, and he's into it. So hopefully he's read a lot of those readings and can help help me learn something about Edgar Cayce that I don't already know, because Edgar Cayce is one of my top subjects.
And maybe maybe you'll have a couple of hangover remedies.
Well, he did indeed have a lot of interesting remedies.
Did he?
Yeah, yeah. Let me see, what is it? Milk and honey and, oh, hair of the dog always works. Always worked for me when I was a party animal. So
I
did you,
do that.
In case you're wondering, we did indeed have quite a night last night. We went, Scott L's band played, right?
Yeah.
Your band played. It was an outdoor venue.
Mm-hmm.
And you rocked the entire county.
The stage.
And the
literally.
Stage literally rocked, yes. And Scott L's team, or I'm sorry, I was going to say the website, which of course is teammfps.com. And of course, that's linked up, I'm sure, at ghostlytalk.com, which is our own website.
At the bottom of the page, actually.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah.
So there you go.
But I do need to make an apology, though. Because I know I in my haste this week, I put the archive up. And for some creepy reason, I look on the website, it says, I don't even remember what it was, but it's like, okay, I fixed the links now to the EVPs we talked about this past Thursday. I'm like, what do you mean you fixed the links? They worked for me.
Well,
what happened?
Well, what they were is some of, like, the PLS links worked beautiful. The PLSs?
That's how I test them. I always test the PLS links. I'm like, well, if the PLS works, the MP3s has to work.
Yeah, and the PLS ones worked beautifully, but the other ones, you had put MP3 at the end, but they're actually WAV.
Oh, crap. You know, I was paying attention to that, too. I left them as, pardon me, I left them as WAV files for that reason. I wanted to keep keep those, the high quality that they are. I wanted them to stay that way.
Right,
that's
I mean,
why I didn't change them over. I could have compressed
them. They're still
them
fairly short. I mean,
they're not that big.
1 meg, I think, is the biggest.
Yeah.
A little under a meg.
That's the reason I did that. I guess I put the wrong file on there. Sorry.
But you put MP3 at the end. Yeah. So
but
it
had
didn't
correct,
matter.
I wrote the PLS file correctly, though.
The
PLS
files were correct. Yes.
Oh my god, dude. Well, I'm sorry about that, guys. People are like, we can't get to it. What's going on? These idiots talked about this for 2 hours last.
Wait, do you? Yeah, three, I think. But wait till you see the your email box. So.
Oh, great.
No, it's okay. I did fix the email, my own email box. I can now actually, I've got this program now that sorts through junk mail for me.
Yeah.
And so now when I check my mailbox, I don't get these 14,000 emails about, you know,
how sterile you are.
Yeah, and how I need some enhancement and stuff like that.
Blanker real good. That's a nice
right,
one.
Right, right.
That's
a fun one.
That's one of my favorite sections.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's very distasteful.
Oh, I know. I can't believe. Do people really respond to these junk emails?
Oh, dude, I've been wanting to blank her real good forever. Oh. Well, I need to respond to this email right now.
Or what happened to you last night? I'm like, huh? Click on it.
Yeah.
Stupid me.
I know. the ones for us real desperate guys. I tried calling you last night.
Right.
I'm like, hey,
really?
You try hey, well, call me back, all right? So. Yeah, we'll take care of that. That's very cool. I know you were talking about that before the show. But I did do a little bit of work on those EVPs. With little time I've had, I kind of started peeling the layers off them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I actually isolated, finally, I isolated the one from the cemetery, the voice, Me Too.
Me Too.
I got to say again, I mean, we're trying to be as objective as possible about this particular stuff, but I mean, I'm gonna put this stuff on the site, too. Once I complete all the work, I'm going to put all the data up there for people to listen to and check out. And it's a separate, distinct voice. You hear?
I think somebody was there with us joining our conversation.
Once you isolate...
Me too.
Oh, thanks.
Once you isolate the actual sound, just the me too, you hear my voice under it only.
Right, because I was in between sentences.
Yeah, yeah. And you could hear me kind of blubbering under that. But then it's very clear. Me too.
Because I was talking about getting $100 in quarters or something. And then you said something about pancakes and I was holding my fists up in the air like I'm holding a sack of, you know, of quarters from the bank, like you see in the cartoons with the dollar sign on it. And I said, they give you a sack, and it's between those two sentences about getting the quarters, you know, I need $100 in quarters. and they give you a sack. Like you know, when you get $100 in quarters, they must give you a sack of money. And that I was in between sentences. You were actually, you were talking when that voice came in, but I didn't hear it.
No, of course I didn't hear it either. If I'd have heard that, we both would have been like,
okay, yeah,
all right, what's going on? But obviously, when you listen to the audio, you can hear that we're just having a conversation, and nothing phases us while that voice,
right,
even when that voice pops in and out.
We're just going on
just
and
going on
and
about
and
whatever.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
that actually, even though it's not as catching to the listener as the little girl. The little girl is obviously like, oh my goodness, you know, that's quite an EVP. But the one that disturbs me more is the one where Scott and I are talking, and somebody says me too, because I was there. Well, I was there for both of them,
it is more disturbing. I have to agree with you on that.
But it's more disturbing because we were just chatting, and I remember
somebody
the conversation.
Somebody was in your conversation, and you were just like,
yeah,
I didn't even know it.
And that totally disturbs me.
At least somebody agreed with you.
At least they agreed, yeah.
It could have been mean.
I've actually heard EVPs where they go, get out, you know, and stuff like that.
I don't like that.
You die, you know, and
go
stuff
away.
Like that.
Yeah, that was actually... I mean,
at least we got one that wants money, you know.
Yeah. It's a low monotone voice, but it is calm. It isn't like an aggressive voice.
Right.
Like that. I mean, it seems like a friendly person or whatever it is. But I will agree with you on that. I listen to both of them, you know, as all, everybody down here has probably listened to them over and over.
Over
again.
And over
I
again.
I haven't listened to them yet. Mm.
I'll give them to you on CD.
You
can download them. You've got cable, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the voice in the cemetery, I mean, I've never heard a piece of audio like that myself where I was there.
Mm-hmm.
We've heard millions of them on this show, but we've never, and I've run recordings left and right. Wherever I go, I usually lay a recorder down. Except for this trip, of course, when actually something happened. But they're clear as a bell. I mean, of course, when we were playing them on the show this past week, I'm sure the quality wasn't there. But when you actually listen to the hi-fi, the files we have on the site in the archives, you can hear the voice. It's too clear. What's going on? You know. And all we can say is that there was only two, as far as the cemetery goes, there was just myself and Doug standing there.
That was it.
Yeah.
And I know Will and Scott Kay were out in the woods, as they do. And and Bonnie was back at the truck, or, well, SUV. So I know that it was just you and me. And to have that Me Too come up, that's what really, really floors me. The little girl, of course, is just absolutely incredible. I reread the sign. It says, this bridge is thought to be haunted by a mother and her child. Mm-hmm. So the sign, which, of course, we did put pictures up in the picture section.
Yeah.
I've seen the pictures.
Do you have it on? Do you still have it? Okay.
Yeah, hear it again.
All right. Well, let's play the EVPs again.
I will before you...
That looked like graffiti bridge.
Seems you emptied the pizza box out so quickly. Well, you want to grab the other one?
Yeah.
Well, I worked on it.
Annihilated that thing, man.
I worked on it too. So I
look at this. My God,
I kept going like this, like I was jumping rope.
Yeah, she was like scared, man.
Nap.
Yeah, I got that.
Okay,
yeah, let's play it again. Why not?
Hand,
you know.
I think that's cool.
We have them both?
Do you want to do the little girl at the covered bridge? Yeah. Okay, this is at the Edna C. Collins covered bridge in near Brazil, Indiana. So let's hear what we got. Oh. Well, that was it.
That was her, yeah.
Yeah.
Back it up, Will. Back it all the way up.
She says, I want to go.
I want to go. Or you could say, I want to come.
Or I want to come, because I don't know if she meant I want to go and do the test with you guys, because what we were about to talk about, because you were talking about corporations, there were two conversations. Here's the setup. I probably should have said this beforehand. There were two conversations going on. Bonnie and Will and I were at one end of the bridge. Bonnie had just gotten done teetering over the precipitous rocks.
You can see that in the picture section.
Yeah, you can see it in the picture section. She's like dangling over these rocks and about to fall headfirst into the 100-foot plunge down to the river
to
break her head open.
Yeah, much to our
or to break a rock. I don't know. But so she was going to do that, and of course she was saying that she has the keys. to the SUV, which, of course, was no end of concern for Will and myself, because you were already riding with Scott Kay, so you were set. But
yeah.
I had to go with Bonnie, and if she was going to plunge head first, we'd have to go and get the keys off her cold, dead, lifeless body.
Yeah.
And that would not have been very fun.
No.
You know, that's not what you want to have to do on a trip. But so we were teasing and talking with Bonnie, and it was interesting and fun. And we were about to start the test. The test is you pull the car into the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You pull the car into the bridge, and you honk three times, and that's supposed to call the spirit of a little girl who tries to get in the vehicle before you can take off. That's the test, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is we were about to start that. We were finishing up one conversation about Bonnie, you know, dangling over the rocks and about to fall down. And we were going to start the conversation about doing this test where you honk the horn. Scott L. and Scott K. were talking about corporations and power plays and government and that kind of thing. And you had said something, and then Scott K. says something. It's something, I guess. It's not that important, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Right as he's finishing that sentence, the little girl says, I want to go.
Well, that just goes in with a story about how she, if she gets in the car.
Right. There's
just totally
the story is there's a little girl gets in the car with you.
Right.
The sign there, though, only says a mother and her child. It doesn't say that it's a little girl. But you hear this voice, and you're like, that's the voice of a little girl.
Yeah,
right.
So I'm pretty sure the story... Oh, and then just as Scott K. is finishing up his sentence, and the girl says, I wanna go, I start doing a sing-song kind of thing, something about for a very long time, la, 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 water, you know, like falling in the water, something about the water, and that was the end of the one conversation about Bonnie dangling over the water. So and then after that, it's a longer clip. If you play the whole clip, you'll hear us then say, so do you want to do the test? And then Bonnie's going to go get the car, and I said something like, so how are we going to work this? And Bonnie says, what do you mean, how are we going to work this?
Yeah.
Because it's a simple test. But what I was talking about was, should we be outside the bridge? Should we be in the bridge? Should we all be in the same car? I didn't know how that was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was asking that. So it's really interesting. Play that one more time so they can hear Scott K.
Cool.
Scott L., Scott K., the girl over the end of Scott K., and then me, and then we
play the whole thing.
Stop it. Oh, play the whole thing?
Yeah, just play the
play
whole
the whole thing for everyone.
Now, how should we do it?
And that
was
that.
Our stuff full.
Yeah. Pizza. So anyway, that is the little girl. I want to go. It's just amazing.
That's really cool because some of the other EVPs that you hear isn't like really. I mean, it's just you hear like a voice thrown in, but it kind of. It's kind of cool how it kind of correlates.
Well, there's a lot of room for speculation in a lot of them I've heard. That, I mean, I'm not saying just because it's, you know, Scott K. recorded it and we were there that it's the real deal, but
it's so
weird.
It's
so clear. What do you want me to say?
Right.
What is so weird is when you're actually there. Because I've heard a lot of EVPs. Oh, Jerry had those EVPs that were just incredible.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible. The Butlers
mm-hmm.
had those EVPs that were just phenomenal. What's interesting is when you're there, it takes on a whole different atmosphere.
Well, maybe that's why I think
vibe.
The way I think about it, because I know, and I'm not knocking the Butlers, I'm not knocking Jerry in any way, but you know when they came on our show and they presented what evidence they had, sometimes they had to explain it a little bit. Like for
well,
example.
I explained this so that people could hear it.
Well, yeah, yeah.
After you
know.
You it,
but what I'm
it
saying,
it
though,
clear.
Is I think, honestly, I could take either one of these pieces of audio to somebody and go, just listen to this, and what do you hear? You're going to hear something that sounds out of place. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
What do you hear? Tell me what you hear. And I think it would be very simple for them to say, I want to go. That's what I hear a voice in there that says, I want to go. Or, me too. That's how clear they are to me. And that's just not because we were there. It's just these are some of the, I mean, I hate to say it, but these are some of the clearest things I've ever heard.
Well, the Me yeah. Too. Play the Me Too for us, if you could.
I need $100 in quarters.
I'm going to win myself a quarter if it kills me.
You know what? The one thing I wanted to comment on that, too. Play the, just to see, do you know where it's sitting at exactly in the...
I think it was 11. 10 11?
Just play it. I just want to hear the voice.
I need $100 in quarters.
I'm going to win myself
like,
a quarter.
I know it's not you saying it, but it sounds like it's in your
that's
pitch
what
of
I,
voice.
That's what I was... It has
it,
the
it
same
does.
Pitch you
it,
have.
Like it's
it sounds
your,
like me. Which
yeah.
is really kind of freaky.
You didn't walk up to the recorder while I was like talking about pancakes and go, me tea. And then over there and go, hey, how you doing? What's up?
Well, that's the thing is, it says
exactly.
it says so you hear the normal timbre and tone and what we were laughing, right? We were laughing. We were in a conversation. I can't imagine myself running up to the recorder and whispering or you know, lowering my voice, saying, me too. And then immediately saying, you know, they hand you a sack. With my normal, you know, tone, timbre, and meter. That the whole meter is wrong because it's like...
Well, yeah, it's...
Because we're like, I'm like, they hand you a sack, you know, and I, not even yeah. that fast. I'm like, they hand you a sack because we were talking.
We were just
it was fun.
A conversation,
it was funny.
Yeah.
And for anybody, including me, to slow down all of a sudden and say, whisper, me too. You know. It,
right.
and then go immediately into my next sentence of, they hand you a sack. With the normal conversation.
Well, you're talking
pattern.
About dynamics of the audio right there. I mean, it's obvious that the voice that came through was right on top of or
it's too close to the mic because it's too soft of a voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's too soft of a voice, I think.
Yeah.
To be not near the mic.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is we had just gotten done talking about how EVPs could be made out of ambient noise,
mm-hmm.
noise from the surroundings. And that's what the scraping is, as a matter of fact, that you hear at the very beginning of the clip, is I'm scraping my foot on the gravel
yeah.
to provide some ambient noise, some white noise. Although it's not really white noise because it's not truly random if I'm scraping. You know, there's a meter and a pattern and a rhythm to it. But the... But it's closer to white noise than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I was scraping my foot on the gravel, and then we just continued our conversation right
mm-hmm.
after that.
Exactly.
So we had just talked about it using the noise out of the air or out of the background, and
yeah.
did it put that together with our own voices?
That's what I was
did
thinking
it,
about.
It is, sounds like you have an EVP-friendly voice.
Well, I might. I might.
Maybe that or it may have been just good for the situation.
Well, I noticed that my voice has a range or something that's
soothing.
That's different than... Because we have to keep... You know, I have to put my lever up a little bit higher than Scott L's because Scott L's is a booming voice. Although my voice carries farther.
Yeah.
It does carry farther.
It does carry a lot farther.
Because it's higher pitch, so it's got more energy. So it does carry farther.
I'm trying to say I got no energy?
You've got energy.
Yeah, okay, man.
It's just on a different level.
Maybe because you have the different pitches and stuff, it's easier for them to just
yeah.
kind of
maybe
get out what they want to say.
Maybe.
Because so. That's the one thing yeah. I've been thinking about, too, is that
it's also interesting
voice,
that
it sounds a little bit like
the little,
you.
The little girl does not sound anything like me.
Oh, no, no.
But at the same time...
Sounds more like me last night when I was getting that
right,
massage.
Right after she was doing it, I went into broke into sing-song.
Yeah.
So, I mean, is that... It's kind of freaky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Bonnie and I had that fight about how we're going to do the test, you know.
Listen to Hunk of Horn! And that was a fist fight, too.
I know.
Was it a fist fight?
I had to dangle her over the bridge.
Yeah, he had her by one leg. He had her by one leg over the bridge. He goes, listen here. We're going to do it my way because I'm the boss. And I'm like, Doug, dude, you got to chill, man.
No, it's her SUV. You should let her do it.
Oh, okay. But he wouldn't listen. He went nuts. No, we don't.
That
just,
is
a
total
on.
Lie. I can't even picture you being that way.
No.
Total lie.
It is.
You never heard about the highway incident of 2003, though.
Oh, the highway incident of 2003
was
interesting. Was
it with the red car?
Yeah, the red
yes,
car.
Yes, I heard about it.
Yeah.
I heard
that
you
was
flew
really,
off.
Oh.
It was
no, I was really, really nice.
No. But,
oh, you were a perfect gentleman, I know.
Considering.
Who owns this red car?
Now multiply that times like about another 500 decibels.
And you got Doug.
But yeah, the audio is very interesting. I mean, I want to make it very clear. It's not because Scott Kay caught it when we were there and we're trying to toot our own horn. It's just like, okay, look, this is very clear.
There's something about getting an EVP when you're
maybe I
there,
make that comment because I was there,
mm-hmm.
And I know what was said, who was saying what, roughly, according to my memory, okay?
Right.
So it's going to stick out more for me because I know what was said. Maybe that's the case, okay? But maybe that's why I think these are really, really cool because
Ghost of Talk is an internet radio talk show. We talk and talk and talk and talk with all these people and ourselves and everything like that. We're really into audio here,
yeah.
You know. Mm-hmm. And up until now, we've gotten very, very few EVPs.
Yeah, so when we get something like this.
So when we get something when we're there and it's like, oh, man, even you know, it was
cool.
Done on Scott Kay's equipment. Scott Kay set up the recorder and everything.
He's getting all credits for this stuff, too.
Yeah. I mean, just absolutely incredible. But we were there.
We're there.
And
that
it makes
exciting.
It just so different. It makes
exciting.
It so cool.
I wanted to say in the past when we've heard these EVPs, even after they say, this is what we think they're saying, I'm like, huh?
Well, yeah,
you know,
sometimes that was what I was saying earlier. Sometimes,
yeah.
Like, for example, I mean, the Butlers, and it was amazing when they explained the whole story about the drawbridge.
Mm-hmm.
And they played that, and they're like, okay, this is what happened. We placed a recorder in there, and this drawbridge has been closed down for like 300 years or something like that. And we left the recorder there, and this is what this recorder picked up. And it was silent all day long, and now we hear chains clanking around, we hear guys talking in all these tongues and stuff. Now, if I heard that piece of audio, I'd be like, well, fine. But they explained it to us and told us what was supposed to be recorded by that recorder. And that's where we're like, okay, wow. And that's why I'm looking at this piece of audio going, there's clearly a voice that's out of place in there. If I was listening to that with headphones on or even at my computer, I'd be like, the heck? Where did that come from? Because like, you're not going to hear it again. You're only going to hear it one millisecond in the audio, and that's it. Same with the Me Too. But the thing is they're clear as a bell. That's what's grabbing me right now. And that's why I'm going to investigate it further.
Well, for the record, there was no moon that night. It was new moon.
Mm-hmm.
So it was dark.
Mm-hmm.
These were actually, though, taken during the day.
Well, the Me Too
was dusk?
It was at dusk, yeah.
And immediately before that, 45 minutes to an hour before that,
mm-hmm.
we were at Edna C. Collins.
Yeah.
So it was definitely, you know, still done during the day, but this was the time of month where there would be no moon at night.
So
does that have something to do with it? I don't know. I know it all has to do with energies, and somehow it's all interrelated, because that I've learned over the past 2.5 years. So it all has to do with energies, and it's somehow interrelated with everything else we talk about.
Mm-hmm. We need to get Dr. Little on the phone.
Then let's do that. What we're going to do is we're going to take a break. We'll be back with more Ghostly Talk, and hopefully Dr. Little will be talking about Edgar Casey and the ARE's search for Atlantis. Stay tuned.
What happened to your journalistic responsibility?
What do you mean journalistic responsibility? I talk about aliens for crying out loud.
Yeah? And what do you think aliens are?
Christ talking about this kind of stuff.
Aliens'
responsibility is usually holding the truth back. Christ trying to bring it back out to people and let them see these things.
There you go.
I think we got one vote on your side, Clyde.
What are you talking about?
Well, you do. A lot of people are on my side, I think.
Well, that's good. That's good.
Just when you thought it was safe to get drunk, then say hi to your friends.
DrunkenDialing.com.
Just when you thought it was safe, make that late night booty call.
DrunkenDialing.com.
Oh. Oh.
www.drunkendialing.com.
Good night. Say good night. Say goodnight, Tommy.
You remind me of a man.
What man?
Oh, the man with the power.
What power?
Say the power of voodoo.
Voodoo.
Yeah, you do, you do.
Do what?
Oh, remind me of a man.
Whoa, Saved by the Bell.
Yeah, so we are back. This is, of course, Ghostly Talk. It is a Sunday night between 7 and 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So that's why we're doing Ghostly Talk.
A beautiful Sunday.
We do it every single time, almost. Not last Sunday, though. We had to do something else. We had to do it on Thursday
because
we were traveling. But yeah, this Sunday we are in studio. We're doing the show. I'm having a blast. I am Doug.
I'm Scott L.
And I am Karma.
Thanks, Karma. And, of course, Will's manning the board.
Oh,
we're broadcast live on Pioneer Radio Network. That's pioneer.rolo, R-O-L-O.net. Our own website, of course, is www.ghostlytalk.com. I think a lot of people already know that, but why not say it again? Now, I know I'm stalling. I'm only stalling because I'm nervous. I'm excited. Everybody who listens to Ghostly Talk already knows that that I talk about Edgar Casey quite a bit. And we happen to have on the phone with us a fellow who wrote a recent book about the ARE, Association for Research and Enlightenment, Edgar Casey's foundation, the foundation that was formed about his readings that he gave for years and years. the ARE, and their search for Atlantis. And so we've got an expert on Edgar Cayce, an expert on Atlantis, all rolled into one, on the phone with us right now, Dr. Gregory Little. Welcome to Ghostly Talk.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure. And I guess I have Scott, Doug, Will, and Karma. Is that what I heard?
Yes, sir. That's exactly correct, yes.
Okay. Well, I'm actually used to having quite a few people on the other end. And we may sort of go wide-ranging here. In fact, I was at where Edgar Cayce was born just this past week and had a fellow by the name of Andrew Collins from the United Kingdom with me. And Andrew wrote a book called Gateway to Atlantis, which came out in the year 2000, where he predicted that Cuba was actually the main island of Atlantis. And that book is actually what got me into the active search for Atlantis. But we went to Hopkinsville, Kentucky, where Cayce was born, and it's also the site of probably the strangest UFO report of all time, perhaps other than the Mothman, but we also went to the Mothman site. So that's kind of on my mind, but definitely the search for Atlantis is on my mind. So wherever you want to go with it, it's fine with me.
Well, before we get into Atlantis, which we've talked with a lot of folks about Atlantis in the past, and I'd love to talk about that in moments, but you tripped up there, Dr. Little, and you mentioned the Mothman.
Yeah.
He's also on our minds, and here's why. Coming up in September, on September 18th, is the Mothman Festival, and that takes place in Point Pleasant, West Virginia.
That is right.
We are going.
Well, that's wonderful. I may see you there.
Oh, awesome.
I know John Keel. In fact, some of the earliest books that I wrote were about those reports, and I wrote extensively about Mothman and talked to Keel quite a bit. And it remains one of the most interesting reports of all time. And I'll give you a hint there. We did something unusual when we were there last week, and that is Andrew Collins actually found a lot of pieces of the Silver Bridge, which are still there. Many pieces of the Silver Bridge, which we got clues by looking at old photographs taken from the air of the bridge after it collapsed. But it's an interesting thing, no doubt.
Oh, wow. And all that is, there's going to be photos and stuff and things like that at the festival? Is he going to bring...
Well, they're actually going to have, they had John Keel there last year, but I doubt he'll be there this year. He will if he's physically able to. But they will have a number of things. I'll bring some of my own materials up if I actually come. They're actually having a Hopkinsville, Kentucky Goblin Festival next year, the 50th anniversary of the Hopkinsville-Kelly Goblin case of 1955. The Mothman episode is interesting. There will be a lot of people there. I assume you've been there before.
I've not. We've spoken with Jeff Wamsley.
Okay.
That's what sort of piqued our interest. And so we every year starting this year, I suppose, we've got a 1 week vacation where we're going to travel. And this year we arranged it so that we can end up at the Mothman Festival in Point Pleasant. So we're going to start traveling and getting out there and hopefully meeting some people that we talked to over the phone.
Well, actually, there's still a lot of witnesses there in Point Pleasant. We talked to quite a few while we were there, and they are willing to talk about it. And it's a very sad thing. You're overwhelmed by how horrible it must have been for that little town, because 46 people died, and they have a plaque there, and they have bricks with the names of all the victims inscribed on them.
Wow. Yeah, we might be overcome with emotion. I don't know. I mean, that is quite an event.
Well,
I mean,
it's a strange case, but you know, the truth is, it was a major tragedy, and it's still the greatest bridge disaster of all time in America.
Yeah,
36 people died.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. So thank you for mentioning Mothman, because I wouldn't have talked about him. I wouldn't have talked about it. So you do get out and about and do this stuff. Did you actually go down? I must confess, I peeked at the book. I did read quite a bit of it. Have you been to Bimini and all these places that you talk about in the book?
Yes. This year we've been. We went to Andros. Andros is the largest of the Bahama Islands. We went there 2 months ago with a film crew from the National Geographic. They've gotten quite interested in what we found at Andros. city we're staying. Yes, last month we went to a site in Guatemala, which is very remote. It's called Piedras Negras. It is the site of Edgar Casey's third Hall of Records, similar to the one supposedly under the right paw of the Sphinx at Giza. And that was a rugged trip. And you folks are pretty young in comparison to me, and that's the kind of place you can go, but it's a rugged place in Guatemala. We slept about 50 yards from crocodiles, which were on the shore. We stayed on a beach of a river, and the crocodiles were in the stones near us.
Well, that sounds a lot like Michigan Ghostbuster outings, so, because we're in a group of ghost hunters, and we tend to sleep in precarious spots as well.
I don't think we've slept by crocodiles.
Not crocodiles yet, but that's only because of planning. You know,
dangerous.
What happens is let's do a high overview, because I know that I've pretty much let people know that that I am an Edgar Casey fan, and that I read everything voraciously about pretty much anything he's done or had done. But let's give a brief. Can you, Dr. Little, can you give us a high overview of Edgar Casey and how the Atlantis comes about, and also I think how shocking it was to him personally.
Sure. First of all, call me Greg.
Thank you.
Okay.
Casey was born in 1877, and that's really important because you have to put how he started in this in perspective. 1877 was not long after the Civil War, and in truth, American medicine, as medicine all everywhere in the world, really wasn't very advanced. He was born in Hopkinsville, Kentucky, and at a very early age, he saw little beings and fairies, and I'm giving you some information I don't typically tell people. But it relates to all this because he was born in Hopkinsville, and this is where a fairy case occurred in 1955, 10 mm-hmm. years after Casey died. But in 1877, after he was born, it was found that he had this ability to fall into a trance state. And in that trance state, he was able to talk about individuals' health status. And it was physicians or doctors who lived in Hopkinsville that initially got interested in him. And they tested him out. He'd fall into this trance. He would be able to diagnose an individual's problem and then give some sort of advice about how the individual could be healed. When Casey was awakened after this trance, he had no idea what he had actually said. And he was actually amazed at what he said. He had no idea how he came up with that information. Well, doctors tested it, and it worked very, very often. So one of the physicians wrote a medical paper on Casey, and the New York Times picked it up, and then they dubbed Casey the sleeping prophet, and that really began his career in earnest, because he was overwhelmed then with mail coming from all over the world asking for these health readings.
And he never charged.
No, Casey never charged. They even felt bad about taking donations, but when he got, literally, he got bags of mail every day, and the readings told him that he should only do one reading a day, or it would seriously affect his health. But he got thousands and thousands of letters that asked for help, and so he felt a sense of obligation and began doing many readings a day, which is probably what killed him in the end. But no, he didn't charge, but it took all of his time, and they began accepting donations. They didn't ask for anything, but people would often send $1 or $5 in with a reading when he actually gave it to them. But nevertheless, his family and really never had any money. He was a terrible businessman, and that's the truth. Everyone in the organization would say it, and remaining family members would tell you that. But in that trance state, he had remarkable abilities. A number of articles have been published which have analyzed his health readings. He's considered the father of holistic health in America. His readings are accurate in diagnosis and health prescriptions, generally somewhere between 88 to about 90%. That's what all the studies show. But in 1922, a fairly wealthy guy in Dayton, Ohio, asked Casey to come up there and do a reading for him. And the man blindsided the sleeping Casey with questions, and what popped out were things which frightened him. Casey was a fundamentalist Christian, and when he became aware of what he told this man in Dayton, he stopped doing readings for a while because he told the man that reincarnation was true. He talked about past lives, And that really is how the subject of Atlantis emerged in Casey's whole history of the ancient world. When he died in 1945, he'd given over 14,000 of these readings, and about one-third of them were about people's lives in the past. And in those life readings, Casey researchers have pieced together his history of the ancient world, which includes Atlantis, Lemuria. We have dates. He talked about America's mound builders. Talked about a lot of other things, too, like ghosts and apparitions and how to see them, which I figured might get your attention.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that's kind of a thumbnail. Again, he died in 45. The organization has about 31,000 members right now, active members. There's a couple hundred thousand people who stay on a list as deeply interested in Casey. It's devoted to studying three major areas. One is health. And there are a lot of medical doctors and hospitals that test what are called the Casey protocols for various diseases and disorders. Another area is spirituality, which Casey was able to integrate reincarnation with his idea of Christianity, which is quite a trick. And the third area has to do with ancient mysteries, and that includes Atlantis and a variety of other interesting things. And that's what my wife and I began heading up in around about the year 2001 or so.
Had you heard of Edgar Casey prior to this?
Oh, yes. I've been in the Casey organization, I think, since I was a senior in college, and I started reading about Casey well before that. Sort of like you folks, I was reading about Casey when I was in high school.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I have a question. The as far as the medical stuff, okay, and this is just the one thing that really shows me how incredible his powers were when he was in a trance, is he would not only sometimes look at the person and find out and figure out what was wrong with them and prescribe a cure. Sometimes the mixtures, the elixirs, whatever it was that was needed, did not exist at the time.
Yeah.
So he would mention, go to a specific pharmacist, and then have him build this mixture, cream, whatever from these ingredients.
That's correct. In fact, a lot of those ingredients are still around today and in use. There are companies that specialize in it, and people. Well, they do track results on this, and a lot of physicians utilize this. But the most interesting of those stories is one that has been validated over and over. Casey once prescribed a substance called oil of smoke to an individual that had a problem. The doctors that did the readings with him and the local pharmacist had no idea what it was. So they went back, did another reading, asking what oil of smoke was. And he said, well, call this pharmacy, or actually in those days they had telegraph this pharmacy in this particular city, and it was like 1,000 miles away. Well, they did. They got a reply back, and the pharmacist said, I have no idea what oil of smoke is. So they did another reading with Casey, and Casey said, well, tell the pharmacist to go to this particular part of the pharmacy, stand on a stool at the top shelf, push everything back, and in the very back would be a bottle of oil of smoke. They telegraphed the pharmacist back. As it turned out, the pharmacist had bought that store less than a year before. The pharmacist did exactly what they said, and there was a bottle of what was called oil of smoke there.
Wow.
And that is an amazing story, and it was Casey's health readings that really led me to understand he had real credibility. But until like 1997, I just did not pay attention to his history about the ancient world because, frankly, it went against everything science told us. But in 97, everything changed, and as we continue to learn more, Casey looks more and more accurate in this strange history of the ancient world.
And it is incredible, and I have to agree with you that the health readings are what hooked me. You know, there's even a story about when he was put in jail in New York City, right?
Yes.
For doing that. And but of course, you know, so you know that there had to be like all this argument and things going on around his health readings, but the incredible accuracy are what hooked me into the, you know, Edgar Cayce phenomenon. And then, of course, I started reading the other stuff.
Yeah.
And the other stuff, I have to say, if he was so incredibly highly accurate on the health readings, what's to say that he's not incredibly highly accurate on the other the life readings in this case as well, which includes the reincarnation?
Well, we did we analyzed what we came up with as his Mound Builder readings, which America has originally the Smithsonian or the Bureau of Ethnology, which was its forerunner, counted over 100,000 mounds in America that had been left by Native Americans. Cayce gave 68 readings that had information on mounds, and back in 2001, I believe, we did an analysis of them and subsequently published a book on it, and we found that based on the current knowledge then, he was 77% correct. There was a small amount we could not tell because we just didn't have enough information, and about 3% of those 68 readings were wrong. And actually, there's a group of people, myself included, that are quite interested in the areas where Cayce was consistently wrong. And there is an area where he was. And that usually gets people's attention, too. And it's pretty clear. It does involve Bimini, and it involves get-rich-quick schemes. Anytime somebody asked Cayce where they could get gold or oil, unearned treasure, for example, always wrong.
Well, which is interesting because I do know a little bit about Cayce, and I know that he made a lot of people a lot of money.
Yes.
Things like the stock market, and also and he also told people, you know, to get out of the stock market in time for the crash. He also real estate. Virginia Beach, Virginia.
Right.
He says, one of his readings said, "Hey, you all should be moving over there." So they all did, and that property went from what just
it was basically valueless at the time,
right? Into a booming, an incredibly booming, city on the ocean.
Yeah, absolutely. In terms of the things like the stock market and all, the people that were asking him about the economy of the times and the situation of the times, none of them were really people who were trying to get rich quick or people who were trying to get what I like to call unearned and undeserved riches. He did give readings for individuals who wanted to find oil and individuals who wanted to find gold or treasure. He did help some people find gold, particularly a wristwatch and a number of rings, which individuals had lost, and he always seemed to be able to lead them to those locations. But when people would blindside him in the readings and say, is there any treasure near here? They got what they asked for in terms of a lead that there was treasure, but they never found it. The stock market thing was kind of different. These people already had stock, and they were actually supporting what Cayce people call the work. That is, they were supporting the work with the spiritual readings and the health readings. And at that time, there really wasn't a great deal in this ancient mysteries work being done.
And also, he couldn't, like, for example, he did find a missing boy, I believe it was, who had wandered out of his hospital, but he could not locate Amelia Earhart in time to save her.
Right, or Lindbergh's son.
Or Lindbergh's son. So there's certain things he could do with amazing accuracy, and other things he'd get clues, but not the whole story.
He said under the trance state, he was asked if the information was infallible, and he said, no, it's not. And what he said was kind of curious. He said that the information that comes through from its primary source is correct, but he said that the attitudes and motives of the people who were seeking these readings and those who were in the room with him could shade, that's the actual term he used, shade, which is like cast the shadow on what came through and alter the information, making it inaccurate. And a good example of that, there was a woman who asked him if she was related to the Norse fellow by the name of Eric the Red, who was actually Leif Erikson's father. And the woman asked it in such a way that she was very proud of her heritage, and that's actually one of the Mound Builder readings that was wrong. because it related, that reading did talk about mounds in it. And Casey said yes, and he gave her some information, and but that's what she wanted to hear. She had a degree of pride in her background. But the information he gave to prove it was wrong. So that's an example, we think, anyway, of the shading of his readings.
And they, and then of course, for the whole thing about Atlantis, you, Greg, took on what must be the most humongous job of them all. Go through these thousands upon tens of thousands of life readings, looking for any mention of a former life in Atlantis. Put them all together into a picture of Atlantis and where it's located. I wouldn't have taken on that particular job, so I have to give you a lot of credit because that's a lot of stuff to go through.
I'll tell you, the biggest job was when we decided that we were going to physically go into the Bahamas and look in areas where no one else did, and I began having dreams about it. And I was scuba diving. I had taken scuba lessons and had a certificate in it. And I was dreaming about being pulled along the bottom, and then suddenly in the dream realizing how incredibly large the area is, and in a lifetime you couldn't look at the bottom. And it got rather scary. But serendipity would have it, we did find everything we looked for, and actually we found more. And so we've gotten real interested in it. We have more clues as to where to look and what we're looking for.
And speaking of which, like he did describe what kind of society, because you've been through all these readings, what kind of society was Atlantis? Why is it so important for us to find it?
Well, of course, when you say the word Atlantis, what most people think of is the center city of Atlantis. And they think it was this highly technologically advanced city. The biggest description of the center city of Atlantis comes from Plato, and he talked about a circular city that had three rings of water around it, and that it had a central hill with a temple to Poseidon in the middle, and it had trees and orchards and so on. But according to Plato, the size of the entire center city of Atlantis was only a half a mile in diameter. It's not that large. And then Plato described the surrounding islands. He called it a maritime empire, an island empire of an ancient maritime culture that could travel all over the world's oceans. Plato made it very clear that the bulk of Atlantis was agrarian. They grew food. They cut down trees and got wood. They had cattle, but most of the land was actually wooded. Casey gave a very similar description. He never went into detail on the exact center city of Atlantis. Apparently, he called it Poseidia. That's the name of the main island also. But he also talked about a city called Alta and another one that the name escapes me now. But no one asked for a detailed description. He did say that one of the cities, Poseidia, was ringed with canals. And that's the one we think refers to Plato's center city. Casey also said that this civilization was advanced. People think of this, of them having nuclear weapons and spaceships. There's nowhere in the Casey readings that talk about that.
But he does talk about power distribution systems.
Does talk about a